I had to inform them when she was, you know, seven-ish, seven and a half-ish, that, look, actually, she's a girl in a boy's body.
I want it so badly. Like, I don't know how I would live without being a girl. Nobody can live in the wrong body. If you had to, you would just be an emotional wreck.
We knew that this was something that wasn't and isn't seen as socially acceptable. It frightens people.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Episcopalians pass same-gender couple rights, but Presbyterians reject them. Leading Latino rights groups say familia es familia, and a preteen British trans girl struggles to be she. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 14th, 2012. Delegates to the Episcopal Church General Convention meeting in Indianapolis this week overwhelmingly approved a ceremony called the Witnessing and Blessing of a Lifelong Covenant for same-gender couples. Although the move falls short of endorsing marriage equality, the 2-million-member Episcopal Church becomes the largest mainstream Christian denomination in the United States to approve a liturgy for gay and lesbian unions. Couples must complete counseling before the ceremony, which includes prayers and an exchange of vows and rings. Critics claim that the church blessings of lesbian and gay couples will be tantamount to weddings. But supporters note that while there are similarities, Episcopal Church law and Book of Common Prayer still defines marriage as the union of one man and one woman. The ceremonies can be performed starting on December 2nd, the first Sunday in Advent. The liturgy is provisional, however. It will be reviewed at the next General Convention scheduled for 2015. Under the new policy, each Episcopal bishop will decide whether or not to allow the ceremony in his or her local diocese. A separate vote added gender identity and expression to the church's non-discrimination policy. It opens ordination to transgender people and prohibits discrimination against them as church members. Episcopalians are an independent affiliate of the 77-million-member Global Anglican Communion. They roiled the communion in 2003 by consecrating its first openly gay bishop, Gene Robinson of New Hampshire. Traditionalist bishops and congregations, mostly in Latin America, Asia, and Africa, have been at odds with their North American brethren ever since. This latest Episcopal move toward further inclusion of LGBT people in church life can only deepen that schism.
One major U.S. Protestant denomination, the United Church of Christ, fully endorsed marriage equality in 2005. But another Protestant denomination, the Presbyterian Church USA, narrowly rejected a proposal this week to expand the definition of marriage to include same-gender couples. The Presbyterian General Assembly, meeting in Pittsburgh, voted 338 to 308 against a proposal to change the definition of marriage in the church constitution from a civil contract between a woman and a man to a covenant between two people. The 2-million-member church approved the ordination of out gays and lesbians last year and generally allows clergy to bless same-gender unions as long as they aren't called marriages. The church's highest court convicted the Reverend Jane Sparr of San Francisco of misconduct in 2010 for officiating at same-gender weddings during the brief time they were legal in California. With more and more states opening marriage to lesbian and gay couples, Presbyterian clergy report being asked to perform wedding ceremonies for those couples, but fear church discipline if they do.
It was no surprise, but this week it became official. The Board of Elections announced that the Maryland Marriage Alliance had submitted more than three times the required number of valid petition signatures to put a measure to overturn the state's new law opening civil marriage to same-gender couples on the November ballot. Marylanders for Marriage Equality is the coalition working to uphold the law, which passed in the state legislature and was signed by the governor earlier this year. Proponents say they're doing outreach to African Americans in particular, who constitute about a third of the state's voters. on the heels of President Obama's endorsement of marriage equality and an NAACP resolution doing the same, a recent public opinion poll reported a substantial change from majority opposition to majority support for marriage equality among African-American Marylanders. Marriage equality votes are also scheduled for November in Washington, Maine, and Minnesota.
Meanwhile, the oldest and largest Latino civil rights organization in the U.S., the League of United Latin American Citizens, passed a resolution in support of marriage equality at its annual convention in Orlando late last week. The National Council of La Raza became the first Latino civil rights group to endorse marriage equality a few weeks earlier. A coalition of 21 Hispanic organizations launched a national public education campaign this week at La Raza's annual conference in Las Vegas to advocate for the acceptance of LGBT family members called Familia es Familia. Participating organizations include the Dolores Huerta Foundation, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, the National Hispanic Media Coalition, the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the U.S. Hispanic Leadership Institute.
And in Arizona, a state known for enacting harsh anti-immigrant laws condemned by most Latino groups, Republican Governor Jan Brewer also moved against same-gender couples this week. She asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals that her termination of domestic partner benefits for state workers violated equal protection provisions of the U.S. Constitution. The benefits were instituted by her Democratic predecessor and now Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. Brewer claimed that revoking the domestic partner benefits was a necessary cost-cutting move to balance the state budget.
The latest challenge to the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, was filed this week by a binational lesbian couple in California. The 1996 law bars federal agencies from recognizing the legal marriages of lesbian and gay couples. The Center for Human Rights and Constitutional Law filed the lawsuit on behalf of Jane De Leon, an immigrant from the Philippines, and her U.S. wife, Irma Rodriguez. The couple married in California in 2008, during the brief time that it was legal in the state. De Leon, who's lived in the U.S. with Rodriguez for almost 20 years, was sponsored for a green card by her employer, which would allow her to work legally in the country. But she can't get the routine waiver she needs for residency because the U.S. government doesn't recognize her legal marriage to her American spouse. The lawsuit also asks for a class action designation on behalf of thousands of binational same-gender couples living in the United States. De Leon's now 25-year-old son, Martin R. Aranas, who was 9 when his mother brought him to the United States, also faces deportation, only, he said, because my mother is in a same-sex marriage.
In other news, London celebrated World Pride on July 7th despite rain, a last-minute change in the starting time, and a ban on floats. The event's organizing committee has been under fire for the past several weeks for financial mismanagement. But the UK's Pink News said the cost-cutting absence of floats and other vehicles may have made the march more political than in recent years. Setting off from London's Baker Street, the procession was led by the veterans of 1972, the organizers of London's first Pride March. As the Pride-goers reached Oxford Street, the crowd began the familiar chant, "We're here, we're queer, we're not going shopping." Political figures on the parade route included out Labour MP Chris Bryant, the Liberal Democrats' openly gay candidate for Mayor of London, Brian Paddock, and Poland's transgender MP, Anna Grodzka. London's Mayor Boris Johnson was notably absent. Prime Minister David Cameron sent a congratulatory message, however, noting that it is 40 years since people first marched in London calling for equal rights. Since then, we've come a very long way and progress is still being made.
The mayor of Budapest also refused to support his city's 2012 Pride Parade, but more than 3,000 marchers, protected by riot police, took to the streets of the Hungarian capital on July 7th to peacefully demand their rights. There were no confrontations between the marchers and far-right opponents who had posted violent threats against the event online.
Russian police arrested a total of 8 people for attempting to hold LGBT pride rallies in St. Petersburg, however, under a recently enacted law that made them illegal. Russian news agencies reported that police arrested 3 rally organizers at a park on July 7th, while 5 others were detained when they attempted to hold another rally later that day near the landmark Smolny complex. Municipal authorities had authorized the original rally, but withdrew permission at the last minute, claiming an enormous number of complaints from residents who opposed it. Organizers said they had originally expected a turnout of at least 300 people before the permit was revoked. St. Petersburg joined a growing number of Russian regional governments in March to enact a law that punishes people who spread homosexual propaganda, with fines ranging from 5,000 to 500,000 rubles, or about 150 to 15,000 U.S. dollars.
But finally, U.S. astronomer and gay rights pioneer Frank Kameny, who died in Washington, D.C. last year at the age of 86, has a new home in the cosmos. He earned a doctorate in astronomy at Harvard University and worked for the U.S. Army Map Service in the 1950s until he was fired for being gay. His unsuccessful lawsuit challenging the firing nevertheless reached the U.S. Supreme Court. He later helped organize the first gay rights protest in the 1960s in Philadelphia and outside the White House and the Pentagon. Canadian astronomer Gary Billings said he was inspired to honor Kameny after reading the pioneer's obituary. He and a few colleagues decided to submit citations referencing Kameny's astronomy career and gay rights activism to the Paris-based International Astronomical Union and the Cambridge, Massachusetts-based Minor Planet Center, seeking to designate Minor Planet 40463 as Frank Kameny. It travels in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter and is visible through a telescope. It was first discovered in 1999 using long exposure photography. The official name change was announced in early July. While it most certainly will not be in a straight line, Richard Doc Kinney, an astronomer who helped rename the asteroid, said in an interview that Frank will show up as a little dot that moves between two points.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 14th, 2012. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Wenzel Jones and Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep This Way Out on the air at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
Follow your favorite international LGBT radio show on Twitter at TWO Radio, read our blog at twopodcast.blogspot.com, and check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. There are also links to all three at thiswayout.org.
When the bell rang last September, Livy James went back to school as herself at last. The 11-year-old British trans girl and her parents hadn't planned on it being such a public event, but the media got involved, and you know how we can be. It's all worked out for the best, however, as Livy and her mother, Safi, told Mary Milton and Cheryl Morgan in Bristol on BCFM's Shout Out show.
Start at the very beginning. Livy, how old are you now?
11.
Because we're an LGBT show, everyone who's involved with it has got some sort of coming out story when they told people that they were lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, you know, however they identify. I guess you've got a story too. Have you got one that you're happy to share with us?
Yeah. It all happened when I was born, and ever since I developed my basic motor skills, I always kind of chose the girl things. I would never play with trucks or action men like a boy would do. If mom and dad gave me boys' clothes, I would always be like, why do I have to wear these? And because I didn't have any girls' clothes then except for dressing up clothes, I'd like, can I wear that? Because they were the only girls' clothes I had. I remember it's one birthday, my mom and dad gave me Bratz wedges. They were really, really pretty. And then we were going to go to a circus. And I didn't want to go because obviously I wanted to be in my brand new girl's shoes. So I said, I don't want to go. Why do I have to go? I don't want to go if I can't wear my shoes. I ended up going anyway. But all the time I was there, I wanted to be in those shoes. A couple of birthdays went on and I finally got my first girl's clothes. And I was like, whippy, finally.
We would buy her sort of Moschino clothes, which were which would appeal to an arty side, but also be kind of unisex so that she didn't feel like she was in boys' clothes.
Mum spent a fortune on them just to make me happy.
Because at that point she was living a dual life. She was at home, you know, she was our little girl, but in order, we thought, to protect her, she needed to leave the house dressed as a boy. And it was depressing. It was painful because you'd have to take her out of her clothes that she felt comfortable in and put her into something that she didn't feel comfortable in, that she wasn't happy in, and her whole persona would also change. She would be depressed, she would be physically feel sick, but she wouldn't want to do anything because she would have to leave the house dressed in clothes that didn't fit who she was. So we tried to compromise, and in order to protect her really from the outside world, because we knew that this was something that it wasn't and isn't seen as socially acceptable. It frightens people.
When you're alone, when you're starting out, all that you can see is that society hates you, mm-hmm. and you don't mm-hmm. want anybody to know. You just want to be quiet and hope that if you're mm. quiet, then everything will be all right. Mm. But so you never get change by being quiet. Mm. That's the trouble. No. So somebody always has to be out there. And, you know, not everybody can do that, not everybody should do that. Mm. And I think, you know, the whole of the trans community is just incredibly grateful to you two for what you're doing. Mm. It's, you know, where, but for somebody to do this at Livy's age is just amazing.
That's very kind.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, that we've been sort of slated for, parading Livy for money, just being in it for the fame and just being in it for money and blah, blah, blah. We are down-to-earth homebodies. We have no interest whatsoever in fame, famous people, money, anything like that whatsoever. It is of no interest to us whatsoever.
We just
want to
live a happy life.
We just want to live a happy life, take what we've been given and use it as best we can.
Safi, you know, before all of this happened, did you know anything about transgender people or the trans community?
No. And it morphed over time. It wasn't something that, you know, she just turned around one day and said, hey, Mom, I'm actually a girl. We picked it up from a very early age, and then we just did whatever we could to sort of work around it as best as possible to keep her as happy as possible, but also safe. She began living as herself full-time, apart from school, when she was 7. And it was only at school that she was dressing as a boy, someone who she wasn't.
I was basically walking out the gate, putting on an alter ego.
Yeah.
Like, disguising who I was. But everybody knew anyway. Yeah. But I did get quite a lot of bullying because I acted like a girl, and they all said I was a girl. You would think that would be a good thing if someone said, oh, you're such a girl or something. But if you say it in a nasty way,
it's about the intention of the person making the comment, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here nodding my head and saying I remember all this sort of stuff, but it was just so different when I was a kid. The things that you can do now simply weren't done in those days.
Yeah. People have seemed to think that this is a new thing. You know, it's not new. It's just that the more people who come forward and are saying, actually, this is what this is, and yes, I went through that, like yourself, and I went through that when I was younger, but I couldn't, you know, articulate it, or you had to keep it a secret, because I know lots of people who've had to keep it a secret all their lives.
When I was a kid, there were no famous trans people. Mm. I was older than Livy is now when the April Ashley case came in the papers. I think I was probably like 13 or something like that. And that was really the first time that I knew that there was anybody else in the world like me. So I really didn't have any means of explaining to anybody how I felt.
We have a humongous amount of support, and Livy has a huge amount of support. She has through being outed to the press last September, she's got a transgender mentor who she speaks to every evening. That really, really helps. I nearly passed out the day that, you know, the phone was ringing and everything was going on, and I had to take her out of school and take my youngest out of school, and my husband had to come home from work. At the time, it seemed like the worst possible thing that could happen. And in actual fact, it was the best thing that could happen, because, like I said, the friends she has got now, the support that she has, is absolutely incredible. I think everybody thought, or rather the school thought, and we're not slating the school, obviously, I think it's just education system in general. Everybody thought that when she went back as herself, that would be it. Job done. She has to be happy, and now she has to work hard, because her work was suffering before because of the duality of her life. But she went back, and of course, that wasn't the end. You don't just suddenly, okay, we've put girls' clothes on you, now be happy. That was the beginning. So I've had to try and educate as much as possible and say, it's not just about the clothes you wear. Gender dysphoria or transgender is about your identity and about the way you think. And in her little head, she has so much going on. It is absolutely incredible.
Have the school been helpful, though? Because you didn't choose to change schools when you went back, did you?
I had to inform them when she was, you know, seven-ish, seven and a half-ish, that, look, actually, she's a girl in a boy's body. And these are things that you kind of can't do. You know, they'd come back from Christmas break. What did you get for Christmas? And they'd have to read out a list of things. So that was, you know, they're tiny little things that all add up, which you would never even think of. You wouldn't, you know, what did you get for Christmas? Oh, I got Barbies and I got mermaids and I got sparkly shoes. So she would have to make up. She had to make up what she got. She had to pretend what she had for Christmas. So I had to try and explain to them. I also had to explain that her behaviour was as it was because she was living this double life. We didn't choose to change schools.
I just didn't think it was worth it, because in any school you would get
all over again.
Yeah. You would get rubbish in any school.
In the beginning, it felt like a curse. It was very frightening. And as Livy says, quite a few years ago now, you know, she realised she wasn't given the wrong body. She was given the right body
for a reason.
And that acceptance makes it less painful. She ain't got the wrong body. Look at her. She rocks. She's meant to be like this.
They can't see me, Mum. It's radio.
Transgender rocks.
How does she look, Cheryl?
Glowing. Absolutely glowing.
So do you.
Oh, we match.
Yeah, you do, actually.
There's a lot of orange in the studio.
I should point out, folks, that Livy has really great fashion sense. Yeah.
One of the things, I guess, also about the people that work on our show is that not only does everyone have a coming out story, but everyone has a memory of being quite small and thinking, oh, I don't quite fit in with the other people that I know, or there's something different about me. Mm. And I use that sometimes as a way of sort of saying to people that think, well, you know, you're 11. You can't possibly know how you're going to be when you grow up because you're only 11. But I knew that there was something different about me when I was very small. I mean, three or four.
I know what I'm going to be. I've got it all planned out in my head because I want it so badly. Like, I don't know how I would live without being a girl. Nobody can live in the wrong body. If you had to, you would just be an emotional wreck.
It sounds like your life's been completely transformed by being able to wear what you like and be a girl.
Freedom, really. Yeah, because I have such great parents. If I didn't have the freedom that I do now, I don't know where I would be in the world. I probably wouldn't be with my family anymore. I would either run away or I'll be long gone. It's such a big thing. It's not something you choose.
I can't imagine Livy not being Livy. I've got photos of when Livy was living as a boy, and I don't recognise the child in those photographs. When I look at them now, I see a child in those photographs, along with my other two children, but I wonder where my daughter is. You're not losing a child, you're getting the child that was always there, but couldn't be there.
It's not losing a child.
No.
It's gaining one in the place. Yeah.
I know a lot of trans people feel when we get to be in the media, if we're on TV or radio or in papers or whatever, everybody is talking about being trans. And nobody is talking about who that person is. Mm. And most of the trans people I know are actually amazing people. You know, they're writers, they're musicians, they're in politics, they run businesses, they do sport or whatever. So I was wondering whether we just talk a little bit about who Livy is and you know, what she wants to do when she grows up other than be a great girl.
I would be an artist because I think art is a way to express your feelings in so many different ways. When I feel pain or agony or any sad things, I would do, I'll bring my pictures down to Mom and she would be like, why is that such a sad picture? And I would have to say, that's the way I'm feeling. All my pictures say, like, I painted my cats because I was happy.
She's very artistic. As a lot of people, because of the Transgender Life Livy James Facebook page, a lot of people know Livy for who she is rather than just being transgender. They know that she likes art. They know what she likes doing. You know, she's saving up for some roller skates at the moment. She wants to do loads of things.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to do in my life that I just can't choose. I don't know how that answers any of the questions, but
Livy, Safi, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're honoured. Thank you. We are truly honoured.
Livy and Safi James talked about what it's like to be a trans girl and her mother with Mary Milton and Cheryl Morgan on BCFM's Shoutout Show in Bristol, England. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Michael Lebeau, Tanya Kane Perry, Sherry Lunn, and Mary Milton and Cheryl Morgan contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Pride and Wenzel Jones. Bobby Day performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by grants from the Yavanna Foundation and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation. Thanks also to our gracious listener contributors. Log on to thiswayout.org to join our merry band, listen to our podcasts, or subscribe to our CDs, and link to our blog and Facebook fan page. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on 5PBA Salisbury, South Australia, KFAR Knoxville, Tennessee, WGOT Gainesville, Florida, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.